Today is May 21st, 2009. My name is Varanya Chaube, and I'm in conversation with Mr. Buru, who is Chief Elections Officer at GCOM in Guyana. Thank you, Mr. Buru, for participating in this interview.
You're welcome.
I'd like to begin by asking a little bit about your personal background. So would you describe the work that you're doing now and how you came into this position?
Well, originally I was a head of department at the university. I was a teacher for a number of years, and I got a Commonwealth Scholarship. I went to Manchester in the United Kingdom. I did a master's in education. And I came back. I was teaching at the university. I was in the Department of Foundations and Administration of the School of Education. And I was asked by the Elections Commission in 1994 to assist them with documentation of manuals. Electoral laws were required to be translated into administrative procedures for delivery and for training people. And there was a gap there, so I came on board and I started to help them to prepare manual in terms of curriculum delivery for adults. And I stayed on. I keep working part-time, and then I was offered a full-time position in 2000 as admin and public relations manager. I worked with that, and then I was appointed, a new commission came into being in 2000, around May. And I was appointed as Deputy Commissioner, Administration. I worked for that year, and the Chief Election Officer then died, took ill in September, and I was catapulted into the post because we had elections, general elections in 2001. Should have been January, but was deferred because we were not quite ready until March the 19th. And from the 22nd of January, I was appointed to act as CEO because there were statutory procedures to be fulfilled. And later on, I stayed on and I was appointed. I was confirmed in that position in April 2002. So since then, I'm here. I've conducted the 201 elections, another one in 206, and we're right now on to preparations for the local government elections to be held later this year.
This is very interesting, a career trajectory. Going back to the very beginning, you mentioned that you worked on translating the law into procedures and compiling them into manuals for people. I'd be interested to know how you went about doing that. What were the sorts of factors you considered?
There are several factors. You have to look at the target population, who you're going to train, and you got to look at the legal requirements. The laws are set out. They're old in British constitution type laws from 1945. We are now been amending that. So it's in a patchwork of pieces of amendments all over the place. Now you got to get all those pieces together and make certain that you set them out step by step. You mechanize the process so that people can now understand what they have to do step by step. If it's polling, if it's registration of a person. We had to rework all the forms. They were so old and required information which we consider irrelevant, whether you're Afro-Guyanese, whether you're Indo-Guyanese, and so we deleted all of that. If you're a Guyanese, you're a Guyanese. And we would have done over all the forms, changed the registration procedures, amend the electoral laws, and there have been constitutional work done, and Task Force on Local Government, they did a lot of work. And all those things, we have modified them, and we're now building them into more transparent, more meaningful, and in terms of technology as well, meeting the standards other countries are moving to build confidence in the whole electoral process.
You mentioned that you had to rework some of the forms. To clarify, when was this done?
We started with the forms in 2004. And we have changed all. We hired a consultant who helped us along, a form specialist. And for the 206 elections, the whole registration process was done using new forms, and we implemented continuous registration. We had periodic registration before. You only register people run up to an election. But then we start continuously registering all the time, updating the register. People die, you delete, people come on, age, you add on, and you keep going. So you can call a snap election and have a very effective voters' roll ready.
Now, I don't know if you could maybe off the top of your head offer a few examples of the sorts of changes you made to the forms leading up to the 2006 election. Were there a few fields that were new?
There are several fields we organized. There was a compulsory field. There are some compulsory fields which you must provide information on before you register. And there are some optional fields. And changes now, we have taken digital photographs, which we print and we add. And long ago, we used to take a thumbprint. Now we're taking 10 prints. And these prints are cross-matched electronically to remove duplicates. And the forms are stored. They're scanned and stored in an electronic database as well as on a manual database. So there's always a manual backup to our electronic backup.
I noticed on one of the registration forms, there was an also known as field. Would you describe how that came into being and when that was instituted?
Well, we have in a country where you have a lot of indentured immigrants and all of that. People came here, and in some communities you go, and while their name on the documents would be Marjorie Prasad, people in the area wouldn't know them. They would know me, probably know her as Betty or Auntie Rani or something of the sort. Because they hardly be using this name. And if you go asking for these people, nobody knows them. So we use the alias AIKA, also known as Susu. So when you go on and you ask people, so Auntie Betty, she lives over there. Oh, so she lives there, and that kind of thing. So it helps in locating and identifying people quickly.
Now, notice this also known as is not included on the R01 form, that is for initial registration. Why was it not included on that form?
Because the form that form we wanted, the source document must correspond with the information that is on that form. There's a copy at the back, and we can't have anything else. The residence verification, where you're going, you will use the AKA, but on the technical form, you use strict information on the source document.
I see. Now, you've held a number of positions within GCOM, and I wondered if you could summarize for us, perhaps briefly, some of the major operational changes you've seen implemented during your time here.
Well, we have revamped the whole secretariat. A job evaluation study was done, and the piecemeal manner in which things were being done. For an election, you bring people on board, and 3 months after, you disband and everybody goes. And when you're ready to start again, we have consolidated that. We have put a permanent commission and secretariat in place. We have institutionalized all the reports. There's no institutional memory going back to a number of years where you could find things and you could research and do all of that. We have changed the electoral laws. In accordance, we have brought technology fully aboard, digital photograph, reading of fingerprints, those things never used to happen. And we have cemented scrutineering work at all levels of what the commission is doing in order to build confidence and transparency in what we do. So long ago, people used to quarrel and fight and think about this. Now they don't have need to. They're seeing everything at every level, and they're always there looking on at what is being done. So you have a lot of tolerance and understanding and confidence in what we do.
I'd like to go back to the point you mentioned about revamping the secretariat. Would you be able to offer us examples of the way in which this was done, for instance, positions that might have been created or how it was?
All right, the secretariat prior to the whole job evaluation exercise had people appointed piecemeal.
Sorry, just to clarify, when was that done, the job evaluation exercise?
The job evaluation was done in 2001.
Okay.
And the recommendations were implemented in 2003.
Okay.
You need somebody for this job, you brought them in for 3 months or 4 months, and at the end they're gone. So the expertise they would have developed is lost It's not harnessed and stored for future elections. And every time you bring in different people. Now the commission has a structure, a permanent structure, with a CEO, a deputy, an assistant, and senior managers responsible for various aspects. Human resources, administrative and support services, information technology, voter registration and elections and those kinds of things. And those people are there all year long with the knowledge and expertise of how to approach and do certain things.
And then I'd like to follow up with you on the fact that you mentioned procedures are now institutionalized. Are there certain monthly reports or weekly reports?
Every activity we undertake, there are reports to support the commission. There's a financial report, there are reports on figures being done in the field, everything you got to report. And work then now is treated as project-oriented. Clear established objectives in a Microsoft project plan, time frames and all of that. Long ago, we never used to do that. Early starters, late starters, early finishers, and monitoring resources and everything.
And this was not done prior to this?
No, we hadn't the technology, we hadn't the skills to do that. So now we're relating with many agencies, can get information quickly, we share information, and we receive, and we're affiliated with this Association of Caribbean Electoral Organization, with the OAS, and we all link and we share information, we network, we produce information for the magazines and the reports produced in the region.
What were some of the electoral laws that were changed?
There's several. The last one we have changed is the local government election laws amendment. It's to be shortly before Parliament. And that is going to influence the local government elections coming up.
Was that drafted by GCOM?
Task Force, Local Government Task Force. But while they have drafted in theory, GCOM has to make sense and put it in a manner that it can be implemented. The practicalities of the thing can be implemented in the form of changing ballot paper, changing forms, modifying various things before implementation can take place.
Now, was there some consultation between the local government task force as they were creating this amendment and GCOM?
They didn't ask us because that is politically motivated. GCOM has a mandate to, based on what they come up with, to run the elections, the registration. We don't get involved in that. That's more part of the work from the legislation.
Now, in 2001, you mentioned very shortly before the election, you were catapulted into the position of chief election officer and responsible for running the 2001 elections. Would you describe when you first entered office the sorts of challenges you faced and how you went about
it? Well, the chief then took ill in September the 22nd, and nobody was appointed. The chairman was there, and I was the next senior person in line, and for whatever reason. But when it came reach a stage where statutory provisions had to be implemented, this chief had to sign. There had to be a chief election officer. And then I was catapulted. But I was here a long time. I knew much of what I had to do. I could have drafted the orders. As a matter of fact, I do many things which a lawyer should be required to do, to draft the orders for publication and all the official notices, get them published in the official gazette and all of that. And I was able to cope and run off the elections. We brought in a lot of observers and joint international technical assessor to monitor what is happening at every stage and to inform the donors whether the elections could be held. And the elections were brought off very successfully. 2001, the 19th of March.
Now, were there some lessons learned during the 2001 election that formed the basis for changes leading up to the 2006 election? I know you mentioned that the forms were changed for registration. Were there some other
lessons? There were other lessons. We had a Commonwealth fellow, Tim Neal, who related, he's a communication expert, and he related with the media, and he developed a code of conduct for them because the media could inflame lots of things and misrepresent. Although there were not really serious sanctions on the behavior, we were able to establish a different kind of relationship with the media, and so the reporting mechanisms were much more responsible. And then we were able to deal with a more mature. There are lots of people who were instigated at being violent and so on, and we sought an education, a voter education awareness program to sensitize them to go and register unless they can't vote. And many of them responded, and then we took the whole operation into various aspects of the country. But we had a more informed, operation, and the response was very rewarding.
Now, the 2006 elections have been hailed as the most free and fair in the country for decades. Mm. In your view, what was the reason for them being quite as peaceful as they were?
We had moved to another level of transparency. All the people who were complaining, we brought them on board. Scrutineers, to look at every aspect of what we're doing. And I had monthly meetings with the chief scrutineers, all the political parties. I brought them in, gave them all the documents, explained to them all the various things. But there is always a demand where the stakeholders want to take over the process. And we resisted that. I mean, they were reporting that, look, polling stations hadn't this and that. And there were observers there who said, this is not true. This is not so. And I think they had exhausted their strategies to frustrate the whole process. Because they were behind people to walk out, don't sign statements of poll and all of that. Transparency and confidence building, we brought in observers since we started the registration. And we had them all over the country. We had civil society groups, the donor group, and we had regular consultations and meeting with them, and they were monitoring progress all over the place. So they could have judged quickly when they saw the reports in the papers and so on, what was really happening. And they were very satisfied with the progress we were making and how we were dealing with the issues.
This scrutineers issue that has been covered widely in the media, with some parties suggesting they were left out of this process. Would you comment briefly on that?
This country, for a small country with less than 400,000 voters, we have 33 parties. Parties just saying they're parties. They can't field a list of candidates. They can't contest. Many of them coming to us for funding support, which is not, we don't deal with that. And many of them wanted to be involved, but they don't have any clout, any representation. We can document piles and piles of stuff and give to all these people. We have been inviting them. At nomination day, we cut a line. Who are contesting and who are not contesting? Who are not contesting, we sever our relationship. You can no longer be deemed an active political party. If you can't field a list of candidates to contest, why do you want a relationship with us? And as a position, a list of candidates got to be supported by electors. Even some of those who contest, we had to call them and show them. They were electors on two of the same list. And they had to go and correct them. And some of them were writing down people's names. And people were calling us to tell us they did not sign, they are not supporting. So there was a lot of fraud with him. And we took on board those who contest. And our relationship with political parties are those represented in the National Assembly. Until the next nomination day, those who contest, we're going to have a relationship till the election results are out. When the results are out, we issue certificates of election to those who win. Those who think, we don't worry. We cannot use the resources of this agency to give to every Tom, Dick. Imagine 33 parties. All they want a hard copy of the voters' list. You know how many volumes you got to print? All of them want electronic copies. Now, what are they going to do with it? They don't have clout. They don't have representatives. So the scrutineers for the main party was there and for the joint parliamentary opposition. And I think that's adequate. You could imagine, where you have a polling station with polling go on, that you have representatives of 33 parties sitting in there. Where are you going to find the accommodation to put him? And they're not contesting. If you're not contesting, what interest you have to be there? So that's the reason why we can't accommodate all of them. And we have said that to them. To their annoyance, they make demands on various things. We don't have unlimited resources. We got limited money to do, and we have to get our priorities right.
Now, one of the exercises you mentioned you're undertaking now is in preparation for local government elections is constituency delimitation.
That's right.
Would you describe some of the factors you're considering and how you're going about your work?
Well, we have looked at, I've been looking at best practices in a number of countries around the world, and we are concerned about, in the process, we're preparing our people to understand that the authority to responsible for this thing is the Elections Commission, and that we must project a very impartial, objective, and professional outlook when we are undertaking this exercise. That we must do this exercise within the framework of the laws. That we must make certain that we do not, cut up communities. We must look at representativeness, common interests among people, we're living culturally and sharing the communities, that you not disrupt those things. That you have maintained some equality of the vote, you don't vary, that one constituent got 15,000 and one got 500. You try to maintain some kind of parity, and that we must consult, there must be ongoing consultation with all the relevant stakeholders, the political parties, the seniors in the communities, local government body, and all the administrative people, to make certain that what we're doing is known and there's a rational justification for recommending certain things in certain ways. But the final body to determine that would be the Elections Commission, based on our recommendations on what we have studied, based on our recommendations with data collected from the field to support these recommendations. So we're preparing them for that. We have looked at all the concerns raised and what have you, and that these are not going to be, these are only for administrative framework for the elections. After them, they become blurred, invisible again until some other time.
Now, why did GCOM feel that these boundaries needed to be changed? What were they addressing?
Yeah, the boundaries need to be changed based on the local government elections law that is going before the parliament. Previously, we had a PR system. Now, there is a plurality system where 50% of the councillors would be elected by PR and 50% would be elected by first past the post. You have variations now. Independent people can contest. Other groups, civil groups can contest along with political parties. So we had to delimit constituencies for the first past the post aspect.
I see. Now, the legislation actually hasn't gone through Parliament yet. So in light of the fact that it hasn't, how easy or difficult is it for GCOM to continue with its work?
We have been given draft of the legislation already. It should go to Parliament, and we have been advised that preparatory work should proceed. The bill would be enacted shortly. I had a meeting with the President Tuesday afternoon. There are concerns, though, from the opposition. That is not our business. When it goes to Parliament, they must address those concerns. And we cannot wait. We have to go on with preparatory work.
And how much time does GCOM need in order to field a local government election?
We are preparing, and we can deliver by the end of the year. Once the legislation is through, and we have other mechanisms, we have already trained a lot of people to do the claims and objections. We can start shortly, revise the voters' list, have it ready, and run the elections. Local government is not as demanding as general elections. I have been in 94 when we run the last, and we managed fairly well. We're talking about, it's not the whole country coming involved, 65 NDCs and 7 municipalities. So large parts of the country would not be involved in voting. We are scantily populated. For example, Region 9 is one NDC, that's Letem. Region 8, nobody would be voting. Region 7, only Bartica. Region 1, two areas. And the whole coastland then would be involved, nobody else. So we can handle it. It's no difficulty. And we're preparing to handle it, to run it off.
Are you also discussing the upcoming elections with donor agencies?
Yeah, we have ongoing discussions with them. And we have achieved a lot of things. We can print our own ID cards here. We're hoping to do our own cross-matching by next year. And we're in constant relationship with the donors, discussing various projects and where they can help.
Well, we've covered a lot of area, and I know that your time is limited, so I'd like to ask you now if there's something you would like to discuss that we haven't talked about yet.
We are an agency, and we have to be responsive to changes. Maybe the next time somebody comes here, we'll be thinking about electronic voting. Because we are responding to change. We have not many countries in the Caribbean would have gone as far as we have in terms of improving the system technologically and as well as maintaining a valid electoral role at all times.
Right.
So we're keeping in that spirit, and we're seeing change as the catalyst to guide our vision all along, where we can improve things so that we can have the best system in place when the elections are ready.
So electronic voting is something that has been discussed at GCOM.
We're looking at it, but I think there's going to be a lot of mistrust. Because since I've been using some things, some agencies have been using it in terms of TV programs, radio programs, people call in and express their view and vote and all of that. So it's going to catch on. It's only a matter of time.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Mr. Boudou, for participating in this interview.
Thank you, and welcome anytime.